Anyway, I thought that I was supposed to be here 6 weeks ago, and I had to call Paul at the last moment to say that I was having car issues. Periodically, when I went out to start my car, it just would not start up, and then it would start up when it felt like it. And I was blaming the car, of course, because I had just put a couple $1,000s into making sure it was whole. So when it just wouldn't start on its own, you know, of its own volition, like whenever it wanted to, I was actually thinking the car was a living thing out to upset me. And it started to do it more and more and more as it was time for me to come and speak last time. But I told the band in the back there, it ended up that it was an issue that was resolved with an 88-cent screw that was just on the door latch and didn't allow the door latch to allow the door to shut completely, which ran down the battery, and so that was the issue there. So it, at any rate, when I knew that I was coming this time, and I knew that even if it was rain, snow, sleet, or hail, that my car was going to start, and therefore I would even inch my way to New York if you all were going to be open. So I thought, well, what was I going to talk about the last time? And I was trying to think, well, Zoe always has me call in the talk title, but I can't really remember what it was that I was going to be speaking of. And I thought, well, I will track that. And then on the news, I realized that I was being informed that another huge storm was heading our way. And when I listened to the news and the guy was saying, you know, New York may get 10 more inches and Western Massachusetts may get such and such, instantly I knew that I wasn't supposed to try to track the lesson title that I was preparing to bring to you all at the end of December or the beginning of January, because I was instantly given the talk title that you see on your program. When he said a blizzard is coming to the Northeast, I thought immediately, spring is in the air. Spring is in the air. Someone told me many, many years ago that winter is spring sleeping. And so I felt like it does not matter whether there's a blizzard coming or how much snow is going to fall or what the conditions of the roads might be. For me, because I get to decide, all it means is that spring is in the air. This is something that has occurred to me, and I believe that the last time I was here, I was telling you all that I am no longer willing to allow what is out there to define what is in here. That this is the mistake that we make more often than is necessary. The mistake of forgetting to apply the third principle of unity and to remember that we are not the victim of the world we see. We are not the victim of people, places, circumstances, or things. That we are always creating our experience of life, our experience of living, by the activity of our thinking. And not only thinking, but the activity of our believing, the activity of our faith, the activity of our suspicions, the activities of our fears. Whether we extend the activity of our thinking in a positive direction or in a downward direction, all that I am experiencing in my surround is an answer to what I am believing and holding to be true inside. I remember when I was a child and I first was introduced to the biblical story of our brother Job. And I remember as the Sunday school teacher was beginning the story of Job, and he was a man of God and he trusted and he believed in God. And even though he trusted and believed in God, it said that the devil approached God and said, "You're so proud of Job, aren't you?" And that God said, "Yes, I am." And then the devil said, "He only likes you because you're so good to him. Why don't you let me do some things that are not so good to him and see if he still worships you, see if he still loves you, and see if he still trusts in you." We know the story that first God said, "Yeah, I'll touch his stuff, but don't touch him." And we know that his children, that his land, that his cattle, all of his earthly wealth and was taken away from him. We know that. And he still trusted in God. So we know that the devil, which is the adversary, It's that voice in you and that voice in me that says, God is not worth trusting. God is not worth trusting. It's adverse to your believing in the first principle, which is that God is all good, everywhere present. It is the voice inside of you and me that is adverse to believing that, that really wants to focus our attention on any idea that this is not true, that God is present somewhere in some things, in some people, but certainly not everywhere in all things and in all people. It also wants to present to us an opinion or a belief that is in opposition, that is adverse to the second principle, which says that God is all good. You and I are an integral part of God, and therefore you and I and everyone is also good. It does not want us to take that on as a true belief through all circumstances, through the mountaintop and through the valley, through the darkness and through the light, through our so-called stories of the thrills of victory and our so-called stories of the agony of defeat. The voice of the adversary wants us to compartmentalize God, to say that God exists here in this box, but not in the field outside of that box. For some of us, it might look like, or we might have the experience, that God is present here in the Unity Church that we have found, but was absent in the church we were raised up in, absent in the Catholic Church or in the Pentecostal Church or the Baptist Church. That is the voice of the adversary. It is adverse to the principal teaching that God is everywhere present in all things, at all times, in all ways. So we know that this voice of the adversary entered into the presence of the Almighty and said, why don't you let me touch Job's body? And at that point, he will deny you. We know the end of the story, that Job was smote from head to foot with boils all over his body. He had all kinds of people telling him all kinds of things. The reason why this is happening to you must be something that you have done. We lay this on ourselves a lot. We don't need an outside source to come and say that your business is in trouble, your relationships are in trouble, the health of your body is in trouble because of something you have done. And it can take many of us who have been riding high with God into a place of such self-judgment and self-condemnation that we don't know whether we're coming or going. Some of us actually become afraid to affirm for ourselves because we believe that some of our dreams that have not been realized are because we are bad, we are wrong, we are mistaken, we have done something displeasing to the Almighty. At Unity, we believe that you can never displease the Almighty. The Almighty is not like you. The Almighty is not like me. The Almighty is as different from us as the East is from the West. Whereas we do count on people to please us, and we obviously reward those who love us, who do well by us, who give us gifts, who uplift us, we have a real willingness to withdraw our generosity, to withdraw our compassion, to withdraw our understanding, to withdraw our goodies from those who we deem to be unworthy of them. Thank God, God is not like you. I thank God, God is not like me. I am seeking to become more and more God-like, and I am willing to let go more and more of all erroneous ideas that God is me-like, that God is human-like, that God has entered into the field of race consciousness, which we know is a field of apparent separation. So, when the Sunday school teacher was going through the story of Job, I was sitting there going, how could God do this? If God does that to Job, what is laying in waiting for me? I'm a pretty good kid, but I'm also a pretty bad kid. I can sing a song in church and bring the house down, but I can also light into somebody on the playground, up one wall and down the other. So if God is willing to do all that to Job, what might God do to me? And there was one little piece of scripture that the Sunday school teacher presented, but she didn't go into it deep enough for me, and it was not until years later that I got the aha. And that was when Job confesses from his own mouth, "The thing that I feared most has come upon me." It allowed me to understand when I got this that fear creates as intensely and as vividly as does glad expectation. The ministers used to welcome us into the house of God and say, "Welcome into the house of the Lord, the field of all possibility, the field of miracles. Make sure that you open up your mind to believe that right now you are in the field of all possibility and in the field of miracle making." He did not go on to say, "Also, we are in a field of absolute creativity, so that if it is not constructive prayer, constructive thinking, then it will be destructive thinking." And so I have been really taking on greeting the day, greeting my week, greeting my life by telling it what I intend for it to be. I believe that the last time I was here, I had told you that Timothy and I, and now it has spread like quite a bit to different people and different places that I've been speaking at, different classes that I've been giving or workshops that I've been giving. I began by starting my day with, "It's the best day ever." And I told you that when I began to affirm with deep belief that it's the best day ever, it did not always automatically outpicture as the best day ever. I think when I really got into it, it's like you always get a honeymoon period. I've heard over the many, many years, the decades that I've been around Unity, I've seen people who come to Unity, and in that first few months of being introduced to the truth principles and the teachings of Unity, they are all excited because they are having so many experiences like yours, my brother. I laid hands on my car, and it got me right to work. I was late to work and needed to find a parking space right outside of the offices, and just as I pulled down, somebody pulled back up. You know, somebody that did me wrong and had done me wrong 10 years ago, and all I ever wanted was an apology. 3 weeks after being involved in the Unity teachings, I received a letter out of nowhere, and I got the apology that I needed. Oh, I've noticed that my husband, who used to be so wild, is now only half as wild since I have come into the Unity teachings. Do you not know that I've only been here for 4 months and I've lost 40 pounds? Do you not get that that's 10 pounds a month I have found? And sometimes, there grows a dependency upon these kinds of things continuing to happen so that I can continue to know I have found the right place and the right people and the right teaching. So waking up every day saying, "It's the best day ever," does not necessarily mean that your car is not going to break down. In my case, after a few weeks, my dog got hit by a car on the highway. We live on a highway. My dog got hit by a car. Tim carries in my dog, our dog, broken and appearing as though he possibly had internal injuries. And I did not have a dog for 32 years from one reason only. And that is because my last two dogs, 30-some, 40-some years ago, were hit by cars. So people would say, "Oh, you look like a dog lover. I can't believe you don't have a dog. Don't you like dogs?" And I said, "I think I like them a little too much." Because I barely thought I would recover the last time I lost a dog. So once again, I was visited by that as Timothy carried in our broken dog. Instantly, my mind went, "Just an hour ago, you stood on your deck. You looked at your surround and you declared, it's the best day ever. What do you say now, buddy? I was at a moment of choice. You have been at many moments of choice, and this was not my first moment of choice. It was a choice to allow what is in the surround to determine what my inner reality experience is or not. Although the principle says, I create my experiences of living by the activity of my thinking, I can't tell you how many times during the course of my life I have caught myself acting out in such a way that the exact opposite were true. I acted as though the activities in my surround give rise to what I am feeling and experiencing inside. This is the slippery slope that we walk on, a moment of choice. We are constantly maneuvering moments of choice, whether we are going to believe in the appearances of things seen or believe the truth that we have declared to be our own truth. So I've discovered over many months now that the best day ever can be peopled by all kinds of people. It can be salted and peppered with anything in the realm of human experience. On the best day ever, I can get a phone call saying that someone near and dear to me has taken their last breath. I can receive the call. I can have an emotional response, a human response to the loss. And in the space of having a human response to the loss, I can notice that it has not taken away, it has not warped my overall experience that this phone call and this sadness at the physical loss of my friend is contained within the best day ever. It's the best day ever because it's an opportunity for me to be in charge of my thinking. It's an opportunity for me to exercise the power of my own belief, to focus the light that I am in any direction that I choose. The scriptures have said faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. When the weatherman said a blizzard, a storm is heading your way, the evidence is that a storm, according to the meteorologist, is heading my way. The evidence is that it plans to dump a lot of snow. The evidence is that it is happening also expectedly in New York City. The evidence is, oh, what if you don't make it there? You missed the last time you were supposed to be there. There is a possibility that the road will be closed, that the highways will be jammed. The evidence of things seen. I looked at the news. I saw the evidence. And the only thing that sprung to mind was spring is in the air. Spring is in the air because spring is in here for Carlos Wayne Anderson. Spring is in here for Carlos Wayne Anderson. And this is one thing I've noticed. And the song that was sang to us was, You will do amazing things. This is what I want you to know about your future projections. That song said, you will do amazing things. Using the word will may appear as though it hasn't happened yet. Saying we shall overcome may appear that we have not overcome yet. Saying, when I get to Disney World, appears that it hasn't happened yet. But as I've said before, if you have future projections of doing amazing things, they are already happening at an atomic level of your being. The projection of what you will do informs what you're doing. The projection of what you will have and where you will be informs where you are right now. I've said before, you put a bunch of kids into a van and tell them we're going to the park. They are in the park in the van. They are at Disney World before you board the plane. They are already where they say they're going to go. Jonathan Livingston Siegel, how do you get from here to there instantaneously? By being there while I'm here. Being there. So you will do amazing things. I've often said you are awesome and amazing. And the delight in knowing and believing right now, I will do amazing things. Number one, because you always have done amazing things. The very fact that you are breathing, that you are alive, that you didn't take yourself out or somebody else didn't take you out, it's amazing. It's mind-blowing. I can't even believe I'm still here. It is total icing on the cake for me to be here. And if that's being here on a day my dog gets hit by a car, on a day my grandson gets diagnosed with cancer, on a day I break my foot, on a day when the car breaks down, on a day when I lose my home, I am here. Dayenu, my Jewish brothers and sisters say. Dayenu, it would have been enough. It would have been enough if I were laying somewhere in a hospice house scratching and searching and fighting for breath. It would have been enough. But no, God had many other gifts to give me on top of being able to push out air and suck it back into my lungs. It would have been enough if all we were doing was barely eking out survival, which some of us have successfully convinced ourselves that that's what we're doing. I can't tell you how many times in this hug line people tell me, I'm barely making it. I'm barely eking. It doesn't matter what's preached before this, by the way. Doesn't matter what the lesson has been. Doesn't matter what the singers have sung. Doesn't matter that they've done the five principles. Doesn't matter that you have taken into your mind, once again, there's only one power and one presence in the universe and in my life, God the good. People can't wait to run into me out there to tell me all of the drama, all of the icky stuff. I'm barely making it. Somebody told me in the hug line one time, you don't understand. I have to come up with $3,500 a month just to make ends meet. And I said, move out of New York, come to Massachusetts, and with that kind of money, you can have a mansion on a hill. I'm serious. You can have a stable and horses and acres to ride them in. $3,500 a month? I lived in New York. I paid more for one room that served as a living room, kitchen, and bathroom than my mortgage payment on a four-bedroom house I live in Massachusetts. Hey, don't act like you're scrimping and scraping like by accident. You're doing it to live where you choose to live. There are no victims. We are all living our own choices, and we're paying for our own stuff, whatever that stuff is. I can remember at one point like telling some people, I think I'm going to move back to Massachusetts for a while. Oh, Lord, I was afraid of that. I was afraid you were going to go to New York to be somebody and then crawl back here with your tail between your legs. I said, check this out. When I pull up into town, my tail ain't going to be between my legs. My tail's going to be up and wagging, baby, because I went to New York. I did my thing. I had fun. I was blessed, and now I've been informed I need to go back to the country for a while and take a break, take a sila. Don't look for my tail to be between my legs, honey child. It's going to be up, and it's going to be wagging back and forth. It's going to be announcing it's the best day ever. So, I have noticed that people in our part of the world and in many parts of the country, They wait for that first day where it gets to be 55 and the snow starts melting rapidly off the tops of the buildings and the houses and the trees. And they notice poking through the snow a crocus or two or more. And that's when they say, spring is in the air. They have waited for the appearances of things to tell them what they are allowed to let loose inside them as an experience. Oh boy, so many of these people wait for such signs as these to get a pep in their step. Spring is in the air. How do you know? I have physical evidence of it. The temperature tells me. The crocuses tell me. The melting snow tells me. The buds coming out on the limbs of the trees, they tell me that spring is in the air. Our Creator does not want us to wait for the buds to come on the trees, for the crocuses to push through the snow, for the snow to begin to melt off of our apartment buildings or our homes or our cars, our vehicles. Wants us to know, if you desire a feeling of spring, to say it's in the air. Because what is the air? The air is the great invisible realm from which all material things come from and enter into being. The air is the field of absolute potential, undeniable, unending potential. If it makes me happy to know that spring is a time of new life, and that the purpose of spring in my life's outpicturing is to remind me, Carlos, did you notice winter is spring sleeping? If there are moments and places in your life, buddy, where it looks like winter, some people are mistaken into believing that winter is a time where everything dies. I've got this much snow in most parts of my yard. There ain't nothing dead under there at all. When it gets really, really heavy snowfalls, this is one thing I know. Oh, Lord, what are my white birches and my maple tree and my rose bushes going to look like this year? Because with this snow packing on them, they have no choice but to strengthen, thicken, grow, shoot them roots deeper, deeper down. This appearance of deadness is actually an ushering in of greater life. In the winter places in my life, I want to remember that. Oh, shucks. The faith inside me is being strengthened. The joy inside me is being strengthened. The knowing inside me is being strengthened that although in appearance I have been dead before, I have always risen from the dead. Check it out. Spring is in the air. Regardless of the appearance of cold, regardless of the appearance of winter, everybody calls snow, as my brother Robert said, everybody has a different response to snow. Sometimes I'm sure when we wake up in the morning, Karn's response to snow is, got to get dug out so I can get to work. Sianna's response to snow is, there's so much of it that school is canceled. My response to it is, whoa, my plant roots are sure getting stronger. Timothy's response might be, I'm the one that's going to have to do the digging while Karen gets ready for work and Sienna is overjoyed by the beauty and Carlos is on the deck thinking about his flowers. This is what I get about these snows. When I was a kid, every time it snowed, my folks tell me that ever since I was two, I would go, wee, it's a winter wonderland. Wee, it's a winter wonderland. And so I have taken that from my childhood, and I brought it into my current experience so that when we get dumped on or when they say, here comes another storm, we're bracing for another storm. Oh, they get so dramatic about it, you have to giggle. And you just go, spring is in the air. And then you walk out on the deck the next morning and snow is piled everywhere. It's a winter wonderland. It is what we say it is. We have been alive long enough to know that, as Robert also said, we will have our times of forgetting and remembering. As my brother who laid hands on the car, as he said, we will all go through the valley of the shadow. It's wonderful to remember when you're going through the valley of the shadow that it's a shadow. Because sometimes these valleys seem to be so real that you can taste them. They seem to be so real that we will not take an opportunity to deny their reality. So it's good to know, even when it looks really real, that what I'm dealing with is a shadow. And wherever there is a shadow, there must be a light. Only the light can cast a shadow. And then it's important for me to remember, Carlos, what you might think right now in knowing it's a shadow and knowing that where there is a shadow, there must be a light, you may start thinking right now about where you're going to find that light. Don't. You are that light, homeboy. You are the light of your world. I noticed early in my life that my mom could be happy, my sisters could be happy, my brother could be happy, my dad could be happy, all my cousins could be happy, everybody in the whole living room could be happy. But if I wasn't happy, I wasn't happy. I noticed that they couldn't, no matter what they said, oh, Carlos, cheer up. Just cheer up. Look on the bright side. I noticed that they couldn't give me from them, look how happy I am. So again, when I'm unhappy and you're happy, wanting me to look at how happy you are, do you not get that that just adds to my unhappiness, being totally and completely ticked off at you for pointing out that you're happy? Do you not get how that might happen? The only way for me to be happy is for me to be happy. The only way for me to be in the light is to be the light. To cause it, to be at cause, to be at creation. God is the author of my life. I am the author of my experience of my life. God is the author of my life. I am the author of my experience of my life. And the deal is I get to choose. I get to experience whatever I want to experience. And we all are going to go through the same challenges. We're going to go through this unfoldment of the process of life together. We're all going to be visited by sorrow. We're all going to have losses. We're all going to have stories of the agony of defeat or the thrill of victory. It's going to happen to every human being born into this field that is the field of polarity. There's always going to be ups and downs. It's just the way it is. So it serves us to decide what it will be. Because I've noticed, you know, that saying it's the best day ever really transforms my inner experience. I've said to myself many a time, if I had not greeted my day this way, if I had not made this decision, if I were not standing fast in this choice that it's the best day ever, I would have done what I did many years before, many, many times before. I would have fallen prey to believing that my experience on the inside is determined by the outside. Do you not get with me what a precarious position we put ourselves in when we decide how I am is going to depend on how you are and what you do to me, for me, what happens in the world. Watching CNN and watching the trial all this week, I had to remember, listen, Carlos, it's the best day ever. Spring is in the air. We have come so far, and yes, there is so far to go. This is the way of life on planet Earth. Every time you reach a horizon, it will simply reveal the other horizons for you yet to reach. This is a process of growing. It's a process of being polished. We have known for years now, most of us, that a diamond is nothing but a piece of coal that has been put under a great deal of pressure. If it had never been put under pressure, it would have remained a lump of coal. Having been put under pressure sufficient enough, it becomes a diamond. If you are being put under pressure in your own take on things, just hold along with your challenge the notion, I am a diamond in the making. If you are in a winter experience of your life and it looks like you are dying, they are dying, it is dying, or I feel dead, hold in the same space as that thought, the thought, spring is in the air. When you are challenged, have a consciousness which says, my challenges are for my benefit. There is I will close with the lyrics to a Pentecostal song that says, I've had many tears and sorrows, many questions for tomorrow, many times when I could not see my way. Oh, but through every situation, God gives me blessed consolation and lets me know my trials come to make me strong. So I thank God for the mountains, and I thank God for the valleys, and I thank God for all the trials I've made it through. Because if I never had a problem, I'd never know my God could solve it. I'd never know what faith in God could do. I'm going to do that twice more. You know I like to do things in threes. I've had many tears and sorrows, many questions for tomorrow, many times when I could not find my way. Oh, but through every situation, God gives me blessed consolation. God lets me know my trials come to make me strong. So I thank God for the mountains, and I thank God for the valleys, and I thank God for all the trials I've made it through. Because if I never had a problem, how could I know that God could solve them? How could I know what faith in God can do? I've had many, many tears and sorrows, many, many questions for tomorrow, many times when I could not find my way. Oh, but through every situation, God gives me blessed consolation. God lets me know my trials come to make me strong. So I thank God for the mountains, and I thank God for the valleys, and I thank God for each and every trial I've made it through. Because if I never had a problem, how in the world would I ever know that God can solve them? How would I know what faith in God can really do? Winter is spring sleeping. Spring is in the air.
And so as we get ready for our meditation, we have a song that we sing, and it's in your program if you don't know the words. Taking in the goodness of this moment, feeling the blessing that is this moment, this life, whatever it may contain, this life, this wonderful field of energy is who and what we are. The contents come and go, but we are that life. We're blessed by all that we have, by all that we are, and by all that God is. This immense field of possibility, breathing in and breathing out. We take this time to be still and know that I am God, that each of us has that within us, that spaciousness. There is room around each thought. There is space between each word. We focus on that space right now. We focus on what is around it. The immense, infinite wonder that surrounds whatever you may be focused on at this moment. Whatever thought or concern you may have, it will still be there. Yet we focus on what is around it. The space. The place of possibility. We take our minds off of the trouble, off of the old story and interpretation, and we direct it toward that place where we don't even need to know. We simply are in that open space, that true space of what we are, possibility, that spring that is within us, despite any outward appearance. we know that that blooming essence is what we are. Whatever I am going through right now, I bring this loving energy to it. I know that it is surrounded by this love, and that that surrounding energy, that love itself, is what I am. And I identify right now as that energy. I take this time to remember the truth of who and what I am, the mystery and the wonder. And in the silence, I contemplate that magnificent wonder. How beautiful it is to be together in this full silence, to be together in a field of love, that we are truly in love, and that coming together in this community, we share this knowing, we bring it into the world, the blessing that each of us is, that all of us are. We carry this community, this love within us, into the world, knowing that it is good, knowing that we are that good.